you. This, I have a written paper for this, which is obviously longer, and I can't cover everything in that. In this presentation, I've got some copies of that with me. It's staggering its way towards a special issue of the Journal of Bioethical Inquiry on Animals coming out next year sometime. So today, I'm just going to pick out some points of interest, hopefully, from that paper. Okay, and there's a much broader context behind this paper, which refers back to quite a lot of my work over the last 5-7 years. I guess. And this broader context speaks to the intention of this paper is to speak to two interdisciplinary fields, bioethics and animal studies. It attempts to build on themes in previous work, such as looking at intersections between the farm and the clinic, between medicine and agriculture. The animal health industries and the issue of antibiotics use, which I focus on in this paper, are perhaps the clearest point of overlap and co-production between what various writers have referred to as the pharmaceutical industrial complex and the animal industrial complex. So I'm not going to dwell too much on this background context in the presentation today, but briefly, this also concerns two arguments that I've made in my work to date, which is basically the importance of considering the political economy of the animal industries to both bioethics and animal studies. I think I personally find it quite amazing that animal studies has much grasp of the global political economy of the animal agricultural industry. And secondly, through my previous work on the idea of critical bioethics, which includes the assertion that bioethics should decenter its anthropocentric focus and incorporate ecological and animal ethical questions within its assumptions around its understandings of health. This is arguably something it did do in its early days, but then bioethics became somewhat narrowed down to medical ethics. So I'm kind of flagging some previous publications here of mine, including my book. Sorry, those are way too small to read, but if you pick up a copy of the paper later, you can learn more about this. So a lot of that work has been, I would say, is very much like what a lot of people in animal studies are engaged in. It's kind of an endeavor against exclusion, the disciplinary exclusion of other animals from various disciplines or interdisciplinary fields, such as bioethics. Okay. Aside from this context, I'm interested in this paper in how human-animal dualism may or may not partly explain the failure to see the impact for human health of high rates of antibiotics use in farmed animals. Most of the major animal health companies are specialized divisions of the largest pharmaceutical companies in the world, producing drugs primarily for humans. They produce a wide range of products with an emphasis on both companion and farmed animals. So these include vaccines, antibiotics, hormones, parasiticides, anti-inflammatories, diagnostics, vitamins, feed additives, drugs for meat quality, and insecticides as well. And some companies, notably Pfizer, one of the biggest, also have interests in animal genomics, and so produce genetic tests in order to try and pinpoint the most productive farmed animals. Of this broad array of products, then, I will focus on antibiotics, both as exemplary of the intensity and also the precarity of animal capitalization, as well as a particularly important illustration of human-animal ontological entanglement. So, it is difficult to conceive of the successful farming of animals without the products of animal health companies. Even with medication and vaccination, disease is a constant problem on the farm. It is little surprise that a major concern of animal genomics scientists is actually to investigate the possibility of genetically selecting animals with disease resistance built in and boosted immunity, given the real threat that the disease represents towards capitalization. So perhaps that will be one alternative to antibiotics use in the future, that the animals will be genetically selected with better immune systems, for example. It is significant that the incidence of disease may be exacerbated by method of farming, as we saw yesterday, and often drugs are administered to animals to treat what are in effect production-related diseases, again as we saw yesterday with mastitis. The relationship between animal health companies and intensive farming can be seen then as mutually sustaining. However, it's important to make clear that animal health companies are not only typically part of much larger pharmaceutical companies that create drugs for humans, but they also tend to operate across what I think we can quite easily term speciesist social constructions of other animals, with major investments in the companion animal sector. So although we're focusing on farm at this meeting, I think it's obvious that we obviously stray into other categories as well, such as wild animals and companion animals. Here I mean speciesist in the simple sense that their corporate practices, including their representational practices, check out their websites for example, animate an uncanny and conflicting valuation of animal species according to their dominant social, cultural, and economic construction. Consequently, animal health companies emerge as a productive site to explore in intimate juxtaposition the contradictory character of human-animal relations. So it is noteworthy that the revenues of animal health companies depend then, on the one hand, upon stoking the cultural subjectification of companion animals, while simultaneously expanding the market of the close to 60 billion farmed animals that are killed each year for human consumption. So they're kind of going in opposite directions because they want to maximise revenues from both companion and farmed animals. The animal health sector then can be seen as productively capitalising on contemporary ambivalence towards other animal species. Where I have previously noted in previous work the contradictions of animal welfare, often animal welfare is, though not always, defined in terms of the physical health of an animal, and so it's really more about enhancing the productivity of the animal body. Similarly, the somewhat, people might argue, disingenuous uses of health and welfare by the animal health sector, specifically working upon farmed animals, are more accurately about managing the risk of disease and fundamentally about securing the capitalization of the given farmed species. So I don't focus too much on this paper in terms of theoretical frames, but I've previously interpreted in my work, genetic selection of farmed animal bodies in terms of Foucault's theory of biopower, as has Lewis Holloway, perhaps probably much to a greater extent than I have, and specifically Foucault's anatomopolitics concept to think about breeding and attempts to continually optimize the body of the animal to render the body efficient and to align bodies to capital. The medicated farmed animal body is part of the same rationale, I would say, and yet neither drugs nor genetics are wholly successful at producing a capitalization which is not in turn further productive of unintended consequences. Where animal welfare problems and disease are common consequences of particular modes of intensive farming, techniques, environments, and practices, and genetic selection, the unintended consequences of intensive antibiotic administration to farmed animals speaks to the complexity and precarity of the pharmaceutical anatomopolitics of the farmed animal body. Geneticists and the pharmaceutical industry are allied constituents of an animal science profession harnessed to try and maintain the profitability of farming animals on a large and proximal scale. The animal health sector is then more accurately framed as a key actor in productionist animal agriculture and as an essential component of the global animal industrial complex, underlining entanglements between the commercialization of animal and human morbidity. So I wanted to take a closer look at some of the companies, in fact the leading companies, in the animal health sector. Hope you can read that. So whilst companies such as Pfizer, Novartis and Merck are well known as some of the largest pharmaceutical companies in the world. Indeed, Pfizer is the largest and is also the 34th largest company of any kind in the world. It is less known, I think, amongst people generally, that they also have significant divisions of animal health. So whereas this table shows the top 12 pharmaceutical companies generally, we can see that many of these, well, just over half anyway, also have animal health divisions. So of those 12, these are the 7 which also have animal health divisions, and you can see listed by revenue there in dollars. I know it says country, but these are transnational corporations. And then once we sort of, we can add in a few other, these are the top 10 animal health companies by revenue in the world from 2011 figures. So we see that 6 of these, of the previous 7, constitute the largest animal health companies in the world. Their animal health sales are shown in billions. And if we think about the profits as a proportion of their overall profit of the larger pharmaceutical company, it tends to be around the 6 to 7% mark, as you can see in the blue brackets there. And then four dedicated animal health companies complete the top 10 animal health companies by revenue. An average sector growth is 8.3%. Quite healthy. Now, to talk more about the antibiotics issue, so this has really emerged this year, in fact. It's incredibly topical. And I argue that we can see this in sort of four main elements that stoked this interest on the antibiotics issue. Okay. The first of these, I argue, is the publication in the journal MBio by Lance Price et al. Of a particular paper entitled Staphylococcus aureus CC398, Host Adaptation and Emergence of Methicillin Resistance in Livestock. This actually, in spite of its lack of a snappy title, was actually really covered quite broadly in the media. And the reason for that was that it was noteworthy because for the first time it was demonstrated that a specific strain of Staph aureus that originated in humans could move into livestock, acquire resistance to certain antibiotics, and then move back to humans as a new strain of superbug. Although the subject of antibiotic use in farmed animals and associated human public health dangers was hardly new, this finding helped put the issue back on the policy and media agenda. And what Price et al. Refer to as bidirectional zoonotic exchange underlined the potential boomerang effects of antibiotic use precisely because of human-animal entanglement and a shared bacterial environment across species. Secondly, the issue was given greater profile by a speech from Dr. Margaret Chan, the Director General of the WHO, at an EU meeting in Copenhagen back in March, where she stated, "Worldwide, the fact that greater quantities of antibiotics are used in healthy animals than in unhealthy humans is a cause for great concern." Chan underlined the scale of antibiotic production by animal health companies and their subsequent use within the animal industrial complex. By the way, that's a term that I'm using from Noska, Barbara Noska, and I wrote a paper on that earlier in the year, which you can check out. And the crux of the concern is that some common human diseases could simply become untreatable due to the reduced efficacy of antibiotics. So under threat, then, is one of the great progress narratives of 20th century medicine. Chan's speech also echoed the widespread perception that the EU is taking the issue more seriously than the US. It comes up a lot and across different technologies. For example, in the US in 2010, 13 million kilograms of antibiotics were given to farmed animals, which was 80% of all antibiotics used. So 80% of all antibiotics used in the US went to farmed animals. The third element that stoked the interest this year refers again to the US and movement, regulatory movement by the Food and Drug Administration there to regulate some uses of farmed animal antibiotic use. The FDA issued an order which became effective in April of this year restricting the use of cephalosporin class of antibiotics in cattle, pigs, chicken and turkeys, specifically on the basis of preserving the effectiveness of this class of drugs for treating disease in humans. However, this was not a complete ban of a class of antibiotics. Instead, the ruling included various prohibitions related to dose levels, frequencies, durations, routes of administration to animals, and indiscriminate use in a wide range of farmed species and the use for disease prevention. Some limited extra label use was still to be permitted under the regulations. And later in the year, the FDA proceeded with further voluntary guidelines for industry in an attempt to promote the judicious use, defined as appropriate and only when necessary, of antibiotics in animal agriculture. And this voluntary nature of these guidelines came in for some criticism, kind of, I guess, if you know something about US regulatory habits, then that's a kind of hands-off approach to corporations favored within the US under a kind of neoliberalist frame. And of course, the FDA has known about the issue of antibiotics since 1977, when it aborted a potential regulatory move on the issue back then. And fourthly, why this year? Well, also, I think there's a greater awareness on the expanding economic and social impact of antibiotic-resistant infections in humans has also shaped the emergence of the issue. For example, it's been estimated that 25,000 people die each year in the EU from antibiotic-resistant bacterial infections. And so there is a seemingly a serious public health issue. So, yes, cephalosporins have been targeted by some regulation because, like certain other classes of antibiotics, they are used on humans and animals. In humans, they are used to treat a wide range of conditions, including pneumonia, skin infections, pelvic inflammatory disease, and urinary tract infections. They're used widely in animal agriculture. For example, the class of the cephalosporin class antibiotic Ceftiofur, marketed by Pfizer Animal Health as Exonel, shown on this image, is approved for treatment and control of swine bacterial respiratory disease. The majority of antibiotics administered to farmed animals have pre-slaughter withdrawal periods in order to try and avoid residue accumulating in the animal products consumed by people who buy animal products. In the case of Exonel, animals must not be given the drug less than 5 days before they are slaughtered. Although it is marketed as a respiratory condition for treating a respiratory condition in pigs, it's also used generally for respiratory disease in other farm species as well. And it is also used to treat mastitis in lactating dairy cattle, which is interesting, it's some, like a catch-all antibiotic. Moreover, certain bacteria such as E. coli have shown resistance to this antibiotic, serving as both a reminder of the speed of bacterial evolution vis-a-vis their mammalian hosts, and the precarious efficacy of such drugs, and also the unwillingness of animal health companies to develop new antibiotics because they only have a certain shelf life, because resistance tends to be developed fairly quickly. Okay. I just want to focus briefly on something that comes up a lot in looking at the antibiotics issue. Much of this controversy centers on the reasons why animals are given antibiotics. For example, there is ambiguity between preventing and treating disease and the use of antibiotics as growth promoters. Antibiotics are routinely found within animal feeds, for example. Their routinized use for disease prevention and growth promotion has come under the most criticism. This moral distinction itself is of interest for the way in which it offers a kind of discursive support and protection for the health disease uses of antibiotics, whilst implying as immoral those blanket habitual antibiotic applications and the obviously productionist use of antibiotics for growth promotion. However, such criticism assumes the normativity of animal farming generally and ignores how all uses of antibiotics are productionist and essential to the successful commodification of farmed animals. The moral distinction works to open a space for less intensive modes of farming animals rather than a more systemic critique of the practice. So this typically flags up those regimes, notably Denmark, I think also the Netherlands, which have become quite well known for their comparatively low rates of use of antibiotics in animal agriculture, and so as superior alternatives to high use norms. So it's kind of like a kind of happy farming alternative to the intensive model. But I just want to finish by asking the question of how might we begin to explain the failure to see antibiotics, the use of antibiotics in animals as affecting human health. I think there's a kind of tempting explanation which would arise just from within animal studies, where we'd say something along the lines of, well, we've been beholden to a rather ontologically pure view of the distinction between human and animal, and so as seen in fields such as bioethics, tend not to integrate them, and we saw yesterday all about the One Health movement, which is trying to do ontological entanglement in some way. And so that perhaps we've just missed the impact on potential impact on humans because of this kind of dualistic way of looking at the world and separating ourselves off from other animals. However, I think that's a pretty unsatisfactory explanation. I mean, I'm sure it plays some part, but I think we have to recognize that antibiotic use in farmed animals and the knowledge that that can impact human health has been known about for a long time. I mean, it's at least the 1970s. Moreover, the pharmaceutical and animal health companies outlined in this paper operate across the human-animal distinction in order to maximize opportunities for capital growth. So they don't do ontological purity. They work across species because it's in their interests to maximize their growth. So I think a more realistic explanation for the apparent sudden realization of a public health threat from animal antibiotic use this year could be found, I believe, in something more approaching a type of willful ignorance in the interests of capital, and in the power of the intersecting pharmaceutical and animal industries to leverage influence on the regulatory sphere to refrain from taking action on antibiotic use for over 30 years. So I think the ontological explanation does play a role, but you know, unless we also look at political economy and the way in which companies at play in the animal industrial complex are also working to further their own interests, then if we don't look at that, then I think we have a kind of poor explanation of what's going on. And I will finish there. Thanks very much.